Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to ScaryCast. This is Dr. John Stamey, live from crisp, beautiful Myrtle Beach tonight. Weather's getting back to normal for the season, and I think maybe the whole country's going to be warming up just a little bit. So we're ready to have a lot of fun here on ScaryCast. We've got an interesting guest, one that's not our typical paranormal guest, because I think this guest is very interesting and has a great story to tell. But first of all, I would like to introduce our co-hosts that were able to be here. First of all, the queen of ScaryCast, Robin McCray. She has company that has just come into town, and she will be with me tomorrow live on True Crime Tuesday with Tony Filosi and Darla Sailor Jackson. So we're going to have fun there, and Robin will be back in circulation with ScaryCast next week. First host, well, I'm going to go in the order that we logged in. Amazing Velvet from Ravenel, South Carolina, better known as Greater Charleston. How are you doing tonight, Amazing Velvet?
I'm doing well. Glad to be here, and let's get it on.
Absolutely. We're glad to have you here. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I think the next person that logged in was actually our newest member of our panel, the Surgeon General of Murder 123 and ScaryCast, none other than Dr. Trey Donaway. Dr. Trey, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, John. Had a busy day and got a lot of things done that I've been meaning to do, just hadn't done it, and today I did it. So I got a lot of things done. It was a good day.
Well, that's good, and that made your wife happy, didn't it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
See, I'm a psychic on that one. I knew the answer to that question before I answered it. Well, it's great to have you here on your first episode as an official co-host. We're glad to have you. And our man from Hollywood, West Hollywood, the one and only Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
Hey, John. I'm doing great. Happy to be here with you all.
We're glad you're here, too. I was mentioning to everybody before we came on that you have been with me the longest, and it's been a great ride. We've had some great guests. We've had a lot of fun, and just so glad to have you here. And what I'd like to do is start off the show, because since you are our man in Hollywood, and you're the person that really knows what's going on in Hollywood, L.A., and California with this COVID stuff, do you mind giving us an update so that we really know what's happening?
Sure. I mean, I'm definitely not an expert on the topic, but I do follow the news as close as I can. But, you know, right now what's going on is a lot of people have been able to get their vaccines, so that's good news. I think most of the nursing homes have gotten theirs out. I know my mother-in-law just got her second one here at a nursing home in L.A., so we're looking forward to seeing her again soon, and we've been able to open up a lot of the outdoor dining again, and there's a rumor that we're going to go to 25% indoor restaurants starting next month, so there's a lot to look forward to. I know there's a big financial aid package for all the theaters and music venues that we have out here, so hopefully some of those will be able to hold on for a little bit longer until they're able to reopen. But for now, I think people are just getting outside and enjoying the weather and, you know, trying to be careful, but plan for the days when we can start going back to, you know, a new normal.
Well, that's a great report. Thank you for telling us. I can tell you, I had an experience today when I was getting in the elevator to go up to my office. I have, believe it or not, Dr. John now has a job with a Fortune 100 company. It's really kind of fun. So I was standing there, and an elderly gentleman who had an Uber packet, he came up to the elevator, and I came up, and I had forgotten and left my mask in the car. And so I just stood back, and he said, "Come on in. That's no problem. I just got my vaccination yesterday." I said, "Part one or part two?" He said, "Part two." So it was really kind of interesting. I got to ride up one floor with a gentleman who is, I believe, kind of in more in the danger zone due to his age. And it was kind of nice, you know, so we chatted a little bit, and it made me feel good that I'm seeing people have some confidence about having a vaccine and being able to get get back and get out again. Now, Dr. Trey, I know that you're in the middle of this because you still have patients at a nursing home and all that. Are you seeing a little more confidence from people yet?
Well, I think we are. But what is strange is we went to an indoor restaurant, and while we are immunized because of the work in the nursing home, we got ours early, and we're about 3 weeks out since we've had our second vaccine, we still are a little skittish around people. Even though we're protected, it's still important to wear that mask because I could be carrying COVID and transmit it to somebody else, even though I'm asymptomatic. So while we feel good about it, it is just a little bit strange to get back into crowded situations. I flew to Montana 2 weeks ago, and that was really an interesting experience because I haven't been around any kind of a crowd like that since March. So it was different. We've kind of gotten accustomed to a solitary existence, and to be thrown into a highly pressurized aluminum tube with everybody sitting shoulder to shoulder. Nobody said anything. Everybody just sat there and waited until the airplane ride was over. So we're getting back to it. This will pass.
Well, thanks for that observation. We really appreciate it. We're going to be watching this closely on ScaryCast and all of our podcasts because I think people are interested to know what is really going on down there on the ground or up in the sky or whatever. So anyway, thanks a lot for that observation. Tonight we have a little bit of a different guest. We normally have a guest that is part of the paranormal scene or has some interesting ghost stories or UFO stories to tell. Well, a couple months ago, I met this fellow in Charleston. He was very helpful to me at his job, and so helpful, in fact, that he got me on a kind of a different path about what I do for a living. He kind of got me on a little bit of a horticultural path, and I thanked him, and I said, I owe you a cup of coffee because of the great things that you actually did for me, and you didn't know it. So the first time we met, he had on a racing jacket, like a real racing jacket, like a Richard Petty-style racing jacket. And it was great because I love racing, too. We used to have a podcast called The Charlotte Line, and his name's Kevin Clark, and he's from Charleston. And we both realize that we love sports history. In fact, racing history is kind of something that I really like. So Kevin and I are embarking on a little bit of promotion for racing. It's called CarolinaRacingLegends.com. That's going to be up sooner than later, and we're going to have a podcast, and we're going to have a lot of fun. And you know, Velvet, you and I do the same thing on Sunday night. We have pro wrestling interviews. We truly have the best of the best in wrestling. Every other week we have Susan Green, the greatest lady wrestler in the world. We've had Crazy Train. We've had Mac Murray, the referee. These are classics that have done great things in the wrestling business, and we all love. Now, some of the younger folks don't know about them, but we do, and we remember them. And I truly believe in my heart that people who honor these greats in sports, be it wrestling, racing, or whatever else, I think people are going to love this, and I think it's important. I know we have a lot of listeners on Pro Wrestling Interviews. That's live on Sunday night at 10 p.m. Just go to Facebook and
9 p.m.
Oh, thank you, 9 p.m. I'm sorry. That's right. We moved to 9 p.m. And just real quickly, who have we got coming up this Sunday night?
We have
NWA.
Yes, we have an NWA guy who ran the territories from 78 to his retirement in 94. His name is Rick McCord, and he was a tag team champion with Thunderbolt Patterson. So,
oh, we love
when he retired,
I know those names very well.
And when he retired, he became a limo driver, and then now he has his own limo service that does corporate events up in Roanoke, Virginia. So,
well,
very good.
It'll be great talking to him. And of course, our best girl of pro wrestling interviews, Susan Green. I hope she's going to be there. She brings a lot of life to everything that we do. And again, we're honoring the greats in wrestling. So Kevin and I are looking to do the same thing in racing in the Carolinas because this is the home. I don't care what anybody says. Now, Kevin, it's great to have you on the show. You've been introduced. Now, please respond to this question. I mean, Kevin, do you agree that the Carolinas is really the home? Was that grammar right? The Carolinas are really the home of racing as we know it. And how do you feel about embarking on this to really honor the greats that are still around and those that aren't around? Do you think that's going to be fun?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me on. And, yes, I personally feel that the Carolinas is really where things got started with racing. And, yes, it's an exciting opportunity that I have before us to really kind of pursue into something that I've watched for years as a kid growing up and really have come to really love and enjoy.
Well, that's great. We're going to have a good time. And if I can get a hold of the gentleman, Dr. Trey Donaway, Bondi Long will be our first guest. The Camden Archives and History Museum is working to get me hooked up with Bondi Long so that maybe he was a superstar back in the 50s and 60s. And I mean an absolute superstar. And we'd love to have him on. And he is from a Camden native, and he brought a lot of fame to Camden way back in the day. So we're going to see if we can have him on. We got about 2 weeks until we're going to be live with Carolina Racing Legends. So we'll see what we can do. If not, we'll have somebody else that's great. But Dr. Trey, we'll let you know if we've got a Camden native because we know you're from Camden, and I know you have a soft spot for your hometown.
Well, I tell you, John, when you were I didn't realize you were going to start that podcast, and I wrote down, make sure to tell John about Bondi. I've known Bondi for years.
Are you serious?
He's a nurse. He's a nurse at our hospital. And he's,
oh,
he's
wow,
a great guy. And also, I don't know if you know this about Bondi, but he hand builds fly rods, fly fishing rods.
Wow.
You know everybody. Well, you do.
Well, you know, Camden's kind of small, but I've known Bondi for years. Good guy. I'm so glad you're going to have him on.
Well, we're going to try to talk to him. I'll give you a ring about that one, okay?
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot for that heads up. I tell you what, we got a heck of a crowd here in our co-hosts. I think our co-hosts and me, I think we know a lot of people. So that's great, Trey. Thank you very much. Now, the reason we got Kevin on here, we've been talking about racing, but he's also a magnificent marathon runner. He's done a lot, and his bucket list, now correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, his bucket list is to run all the major marathons in the world. Tell us about your bucket
list.
Yes, sir. And tell us about how in the heck did you get involved in marathon running?
Well, essentially speaking, the bucket list involves what's called the World Majors of Marathons. So that is a series of six races across the globe that are run throughout the year. There's London, New York, Boston, Tokyo, Berlin, and Chicago. Now, basically, those are like the biggest and most prolific of the marathons that everyone knows. So when you run all those, well, for the elites, I mean, they have their big old, you know, their checks that they receive. But for the average, you know, the average human runner, their goal is to make it to run all six, because then you will get the big the big medal that's going to have all six stars representing the six major marathons. And it's such an experience, not just to say that you made it to run all six marathons, but for me personally, I mean, just to experience some of that culture, man, it's amazing.
Wow,
Kevin, this is Trey. That sounds great. Now, which ones have you run so far? Because John told me you've run some of them. Which ones have you been to?
I have. I've run Chicago, New York. Just recently, I ran Tokyo, and I'm about to do Berlin here in the fall.
You probably want to wait a little while before you go to London.
Well, the funny thing about London, London is one of the hardest ones to get into, because if you're not a UK citizen, you have to get in on the lottery or charity. So I've got a little bit of time to wait on that one. But, I mean, you know, no worries.
Well, that's a great list. But I noticed that there's no Greece. There's no marathon in Greece. You'd think they'd have one in Greece. I mean, the original marathon.
Well, you'd think that. Also the fact that, and also America, you know, being so heavy. I mean, we got, what, 3 of the marathons in the U.S. of A.? You know, you'd think that they'd want to spread it across the globe. But, I mean, you know, I don't know. I didn't set it up that way. I just kind of follow it.
Yeah, but I mean, I would think that I know one end of that marathon race was marathon, but I don't remember where the other end of that that 20 some odd mile course was. But gosh, you'd think that would be an annual thing that they'd have, just because why not reinvent the wheel right there in Greece?
Very true. I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that some more.
Maybe it could be the Kevin Clark Marathon Greece Marathon. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you better be careful. You've got a Comic-Con promoter here. I might just see what I can do. No, that would be great. And, you know, it just goes to show you that there are a lot of opportunities in the world. You know, if you think everything's already been done, no, it hasn't. And that just sounds wonderful. Now, Kevin, how did you – by the way, when you were talking about London and how difficult it is to get in, what people might not know is the British Open is actually the World Championship of Golf, and everyone who enters can get in. And it just whittles down until they get, you know, the final 72 – and then they start on that, and it's a shame that they don't have some kind of qualifying like that. But yeah, the British and I thought about going to the British Amateur. This is back when I was in college, and I was a 2 handicapper, and I could play golf. But it's tough to get over there, and it's expensive. I assume you said you'd been to Tokyo, right?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Okay, I'm going to ask the rude question. How much did it cost to run the Tokyo Marathon?
Well, I did that. I was on charity for that one. So basically speaking, I had to raise 5,000 yen, if I remember correctly. So it's a couple thousand here in the U.S. of A dollars, but, you know, you find the right people that really care about that sort of thing. And, you know, then, of course, you get over across the pond and you experience that and you really see what it does, what that money goes towards. And it really kind of pulls at your heartstrings and keeps you motivated.
I understand. I know Devin Tate. I don't know if you were out there in Los Angeles in 1984, but I was at I'm pretty sure it was 84. I was out there at the L.A. Olympics. And good Lord, it was expensive. My buddy had to get into the lottery 2 years in advance to get us tickets. It was it was so expensive, but it was worth it. I mean, it was an experience that I'll never forget. And Kevin, I'm going to ask you a very bad question. I know that the 2 times that I've been to Japan, it's like if you ask for help from anybody, they put their hand out and want $5. I mean, they do. It's just the way it is. And that's kind of what I didn't like too much about Japan. It was even worse than New York City. And what year were you over there in Japan?
In Tokyo was 2019 that I went over there. And believe it or not, very recently. And to be honest, I had a different experience than you, my friend, because when we were over there, I mean, those folks couldn't be some of the nicest folk out there. I mean, you know, you're looking.
Oh, they
if
were
you
nice.
Look
yeah.
even the slightest. Oh, yeah. But if you look the slightest bit lost, they'd immediately help you and just not even ask for nothing. You know, Chinese were the same way. We made a little stopover in China for 2 days before we got to Tokyo. Same deal. Some of the nicest, friendliest, most helpful folk out there.
Okay, well, then maybe I'll have to go back to Japan. I was at a university doing a talk, and over there, university professors are some of the highest paid people in the entire country. And maybe they mistook me for being one of those where over here in the United States we're not exactly. So yeah, but yeah, it was. But anyway, it was interesting, and I'm glad you had a great time over there. How I'm going to ask you a good question here. First of all, how did you get into marathon running? And then I want to talk to two people. I want to talk to Amazing Velvet. He's a wrestler. He is in shape. He is in a sport that is extremely difficult from several aspects. And I'm going to ask you about this, Velvet. And I'm going to ask you and Kevin to talk a little bit about and compare what you guys do. And Devin, I know that you're a man of the world, and I've got a good question for you and Kevin too. But first of all, Kevin, tell us, how did you get involved in the marathon business?
Well, essentially speaking, it's two parts here. The first is the fact that, you know, I can't sing and I can't dance and I can't throw a ball. So running is kind of like the next best option. But it's also it's a family business because it started out with my granddad back when he was in the Army. He played a little bit of basketball but also started running. And then, of course, when my mom came along, you know, he was running with her and helping her train and get to being the competitor that she became. And she even made it to Junior Olympics back in Texas back in the day. So it just kind of came naturally to me.
When did you
Kevin,
run your
when,
first
when
marathon?
When you were
oh,
a youngster,
Trey, go ahead.
When you were in grade school, were you the fastest kid in the class? Were you a runner when you were in sixth grade? Or when did you start developing the ability to run distance like that?
Well, the distance running itself actually began very early on. I mean, my mom will tell you, I broke my leg running in the kitchen as a toddler. Broke my leg as a toddler running. So that was really the beginning. But then fast forward to elementary school, doing the fun runs at my elementary school. Me and my mom, we're out there the longest out of anyone. You know, kids will go like two or three laps, they're done. They want to go play basketball. They want to, you know, kickball, whatever. Me and my mom, we just kept going lap after lap. But the speed itself really didn't start developing until, I'd say, late junior high, high school, when I'm running cross country and track and working under Coach Tom Hess, who was really a great coach and mentor to me.
I know my two of my children, actually all three of them, ran cross country at one time. And I remember the T-shirt that they'd wear and says, your punishment is my sport. That was directed to football players. That's how they looked at it. You know, they didn't have the cheerleaders out there yelling for them, but their running was their sport as opposed to punishment for a football player who has to do laps.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we didn't have the shirt like that, but we had the same mentality for us going.
Right.
Well,
now I understand as a marathon runner, you don't run, you work up to a marathon, but you try not to run the distances of a marathon in practice because it actually, it's a detriment to your body. You pay a price when you do a marathon run. So what type of mental transition is there between how far would you run in a day just because you're a runner, so you're going to run every day or every other day? Or what type of a distance do you run then compared to a marathon?
Well, in my training, actually, it kind of varies because there are some days where I'll do more speed training. So that's repeats. That's going to be some hammer intervals. And then there are other days that are simply a long run. Like, for example, mainly on the Saturday mornings, I get up and I can go do maybe 2 hours of running or 20 miles of running, depending on the day and the timing. But, yeah, you don't want to go the full race distance with a marathon because that's when it starts to tax into your fuel reserves and your body fat a little bit.
Right. Well, and I've never seen you, Kevin, but – you don't sound like you're chunky.
I don't know
any long distance runners who are chunky, so I don't think you probably have very much body fat on you if you're that kind of a runner.
No.
That's a great observation, Dr. Trey. It really is. And yeah, those were some good fundamental questions about being a marathon runner. Amazing Velvet, I want to inform you that over the last 4 months, knowing you and knowing Susan Green, and I'm actually Susan Green's biographer, and talking with her about wrestling, I had no idea the amazing complexities of being a wrestler and knowing what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. It's about as complicated as a mathematical equation. It really is. And I know that great wrestlers have to be in the most incredible shape, don't they? They really do.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Most certainly.
Just let me ask this. What kind of training is involved to get in shape to be in WCW or to be in WWE or WWF? How intense is the training? Because, Kevin, I know the training for you as a marathon runner, it's intense. It has to be. So, Velvet, how is the training aspect?
It's a very intense because in order to even get looked at, first off, to get looked at something on TV, you've got to have at least, they look at you, at least have 5 years experience and at least 1,000 matches by that point, if not more. The training aspect of it, barring any injuries, say you're trying to get there, training's very intense. It's some days it's like Kevin said, some days are speed, some days are not. Some days are cardio, and some days are bumps. But the problem is your body has a bump count, which means every time you hit that mat in that ring, that's one less bump you're going to have later on. So, you know, a lot of these guys try to save some for later on when they get older. But it doesn't matter because it all catches up to you in the long run anyway. But the intensity is basically you have to have a football mentality and you have to have a wrestler soul. So basically you basically gotta run the ropes and do things we call blow up drills with other people involved. So where basically you pretty much either pass out or throw up if you really want to get there. And a lot of these guys can't do what Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes and a bunch of others did back in the day. So those guys were crazy good at cardio, crazy good at stamina. I mean, can anybody on this panel name one professional wrestler in today's genre can go an hour, hour and a half in a match, like a Ric Flair or a Dusty Rhodes or a Steamboat or a Savage? I mean, if you can name one, I will have to dig up and see if they've done anything like that because today's guys don't have that drive.
Well,
to them, it's all about money.
Velvet, I think I'm qualified to answer that question. None of them can. Today, not a single one of them can.
Because like we just talked about on Pro Wrestling Interviews Sunday, they don't do catcher's catch can anymore, which basically we get in the ring and we go. Nobody can do that because they're all followers. There's no leaders anymore. Basically, if I'm wrestling Devin and Devin's, it has, you know, I'm controlling the match and giving him his spots because there's a leader and a follower. Basically, even if I'm losing a match and I'm calling the match for Devin, it's gonna be the fact that I'm the veteran and he's green or he's got less years in the business than I do. Normally that's how that happens. Everybody in WWE gets a script. They would hand Devin a paper and they'd hand me a paper, and we'd have to do everything that was written on that paper, and if we did not do it, we're subject to not being on TV next week or maybe 3-4 months. I mean, that's how that works. You can't screw up. So basically, they take it out of your hands. So if Devin and I wanted to put on a 5-star match and we had all these things we wanted to do, it's not going to happen on TV because they're not going to let it happen. Like, right now they're not wrestling 5 nights a week like they used to. When they used to be on the road and wrestle 5 nights a week, I can understand them saving, you know, stuff for TV or not, you know, getting hurt on, you know, on the house shows and things like that. I get that. But if I come up with every idea pretty much gets shot down unless you're, you know, Triple H or, you know, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, you know, you can't be, a new guy. This Damian Priest is, you know, he's a new guy at the WWE. He can't walk into the office and say, well, I want to do this and this and this. They're going to look at him and go, yeah, not happening. Because he hasn't proved, he's probably one of the better wrestlers, but they're going to dumb him down. And that's what they do on TV. They dumb you down about 3-4 moves, and that's what you see every week, and you know it's coming. So it's not original anymore. I mean, AEW's trying, but their only problem is they're on the Friends, Family, and Lovers program in AEW. So nobody's going to get in but who they want to get in. So it's very political, and I hate it because it used to not be political. It used to be on your skill set. So, but, I mean, you got different skill levels in running. You know, there's guys that are, you know, wicked great at long distance and cardio and knowing when to kick it in another gear when they need it. You know, it's the same thing with a wrestler. Wrestler knows when to bring it up a notch and take it down a notch. You know, we're basically long distance runners as well because of our cardio. Our cardio's different, but it's probably more intense than your cardio. You know, you're welcome to come over and watch. I got a ring in my yard. You're welcome to come over and watch a training session. You'd be like, oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
It's not for the weak at heart. It's not for the weak at heart, put it that way.
I believe it.
But yeah. I mean, that's just sort of what – there's a lot more that goes on with it. But, you know, that's a whole nother story. So.
But we've got two
different sports. That's right.
And they're still sports, and they require cardio, and they require concentration and work. And Kevin, I'm gonna go out there on a limb, and I'm gonna guess that marathon running is a lot of work, and it's a lot of mental work. Correct?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a saying in marathoning that the race really doesn't begin until you hit mile 20. When you got that last 6.2 miles left of the race to go. And that's when, you know, a lot of guys can either mentally crack or they can know that, hey, it's time to start pushing the pace a little bit, you know.
Right. And I would say that, like with everything, whether it's surgery, whether it's business, whether it's wrestling, or whether it's entertainment and media, like our co-hosts do, that's what we do for a living. It's mile 20 when you start having to kick it in gear, because we're all super professionals at what we do. No, we really are, and it's interesting. So at mile 20, so that's the deal, huh?
Pretty much.
All right. Now, do you and Devin? After I ask Kevin two questions, I'm going to turn to you because I want to chat with you a little bit about all this. Now, Devin, other than the Big Six, what are some of the standard marathons that you run? Or do you? Do you go out there and find a marathon in April and go run it, or do you just train?
I've got a few marathons that I try to hit up, but I'm more aimed towards the half marathons and the 10Ks, because those you can hit, within like a space of 2 months and not have as much taxation on the body. In fact, really, you look at the elites, they really don't run more than 2 marathons in a year. I mainly have hit the Myrtle Beach Marathon. That would have been this past week, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and now it's moved to the month of May.
Speaking of Myrtle Beach,
oh, you're fine.
Let me talk to Uncle Doug, my buddy, who is on the planning committee and involved in it, and I'll find out exactly when it's really going to happen. Remind me of that, okay?
Well, I can tell you it's supposed to happen the first weekend of May, May 6th and 7th. So a little awkward timing,
I won't argue with that. I'll let you know what Uncle Doug says. In fact, I'll introduce you to Uncle Doug. He's in the middle of it and all that. He has. Do you remember the guy that has the Jumbotron there at the finish line?
I believe so. Yes,
that's Uncle Doug. So
okay,
I'll get in touch with Doug tomorrow. I'll go buy him lunch at the local Thai restaurant, and I'll say what's going on because Kevin Clark needs to know.
All right, I guarantee, I promise that.
So basically, a real marathoner doesn't do a lot of marathons; they do just a couple in a year, right?
Correct, because there's all the time that you have to put in to build up for a marathon, and then it takes at least a week or so to recover from the marathon before you start back into training for your 5K or 10K or whatever next event you might have planned.
All right, now comes a weird question. Do you care if you win a 5K or 10K? Does that matter
Absolutely.
To you as a marathon runner? Oh, it does?
Oh, yeah. Anytime I go into a race, I believe from the start line that until that checkered flag falls, I got a chance to win. And I'm going to go out there and I'm going to go for it.
So a marathon runner is really very versatile in what they attempt to do, not just go 26.2? Is that right?
That's correct.
Now, remind us, where did 26.2 come from? I know it's important, and I bet as a marathon runner, at least you know what it is. I don't remember.
Well, the best way I can explain it is that is essentially 42 kilometers, and somewhere in the legend of the first marathon, where the guy dies at the end, spoiler alert, that is essentially the distance that he ran from the battlefield to the town of Marathon.
Okay. Well, thank you very
much. That's why
you
need to
have
a marathon and end up in Marathon.
Exactly. And it's funny that, you know, somebody dies at the end and it's like, yeah, you know, this will make a great sport. And here we are today.
Let's see if we can not die. Okay, that's great.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
All right. Wonderful commentary there. Devin Tate out there in West Hollywood / Los Angeles. I know that you guys have a lot of races. I know you have a lot of foot races. That's what I'm generically calling this. But I know you
do.
And does the town love them? I bet they do.
Well, it depends on who you ask. Every year for the LA Marathon, there's a bunch of people that get upset and complain and act like they had no idea there was an annual humongous marathon that would close down the streets all over the city. So there are people that always complain about traffic, but I think in general, you know, people love to see, all the different types of people that come out and participate. And, you know, personally, I've never run in the LA Marathon, but my band, we played at it three years in a row. And from playing at the LA Marathon, we also got asked to do a few of the other races. Like you mentioned, there was a Sunset Strip half marathon, and Hollywood has its own half marathon. So I've been lucky enough to be around a lot of those events, and they kind of inspired me to want to run too. So I actually did a half marathon in Kansas City a couple of years ago, and it was like a rock and roll themed. It was called Rock the Parkway. So there was live bands that were performed, you know, all along the race route, which is something I was familiar with since that's what I had done before in LA. So, yeah, I mean, there's a ton of health conscious people out here in LA. So I think the LA Marathon is a really huge event that in general, most people really look forward to and enjoy.
You know, Devin, I think it would be really difficult to understand if somebody lives in LA, how they can complain about traffic from an occasional marathon.
Right.
I mean, if they don't like traffic, they're living in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really need to move.
Yep.
and by the way, Devin, because I don't think the Amazing Velvet nor Dr. Trey know really about your accomplishments, because you are one of the most accomplished pop culture musicians that I know. We about a year and a half ago, or I guess it was not this Valentine's Day, but last Valentine's Day, Wendy Ho sang one of your songs. Do you mind giving us just a little bit about you and your musical connection and the great things that you have done? Because I think they need to know, Kevin, I think you'll enjoy hearing this, because Devin is an extremely talented, very smart, and very accomplished musician, and I believe that. Devin, do you mind giving your verbal resume here?
Well, first of all, you're way too kind, but I appreciate it, so thank you for
No,
that.
I'm honest. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I moved out here to L.A. and in the year 2000, so unfortunately I did miss the 84 Olympics out here, but I'm looking forward to the 2028 Olympics here in L.A. But yeah, I moved out here with, you know, the intention of being involved in the music industry in some form. And I ended up meeting a couple of out at karaoke. I used to do karaoke a lot, which is a good place to start if you're wanting to be a singer or a musician, I think. And I did meet a couple people through karaoke, and we ended up forming a band. And we were called Shitting Glitter. And we performed for I was in that band for about 10
Velvet's
years.
Favorite name.
Yeah, from 2001 to 2010. And yeah, through that band, I just had a lot of great experiences. We played all over. We played the West Coast, the East Coast. We flew to Iceland and Canada and places like that, and had our music featured in some indie films and things like that. So just through that experience of being out here in LA and being a gigging musician, I've met so many people and had, you know, a lot of great experiences. And Wendy Ho was one of the people that we had opened for at one point. And I knew her because at the time MTV had started up a new network called Logo, which I believe is still on the air. I don't have cable anymore, so I don't know. But she had the number one music video on the Logo countdown. And that was when she was, it was called I Stole Your Purse. And you may have seen that the show Nip Tuck actually copied her and created a character called Hot Coco that was a direct ripoff of Wendy Ho. And it was Jennifer Coolidge, and she had a music video that they showed within the show of Nip Tuck, and it was almost a shot-for-shot copy of Wendy Ho's Bitch, I Stole Your Purse. So, but it was a lot of fun to work with Wendy, and, you know, I have a lot of stories. I don't know. I don't remember them all the time, so you have to kind of nudge my memory. But basically in 2010 is when I went solo. I left the band Shitting Glitter, and I've had about 3 albums under my own name. And unfortunately, Amy from Shitting Glitter just passed away a couple weeks ago. I mentioned that last week here on the show. So I have been knee-deep in trying to kind of rekindle the legacy of Shitting Glitter and get a website back up, and I've been posting some videos. So If anybody wants to check that out, they're on my YouTube channel. You can just search for Shitting Glitter and you'll find a lot of our old videos.
Well, Devin, I'll tell you,
you
what.
You need to do it.
Scarycast is going to help you. And whenever you want, you get the entire show next week, week after, or week after to talk about your band, what you've done, what you're going to do. Would you let me know when you'd like to have the whole show for your band?
Oh, I would appreciate that so much, John. Thank you. Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Okay, well that sounds great. And yeah, and I'm sorry I've got a bad memory because I think I'm working too hard now. But what was that single that you did? Not this past Valentine's Day, but the last Valentine's Day. It was so incredible, and we're going to have to bring that out of the vault for next week. What that Wendy Ho sang?
Yeah, sure. So that's called "Anyone Can Break Somebody's Heart," and Wendy Ho was my featured vocalist on that song, and then it was remixed by a guy named Mr. Anderson. So it's kind of all three of us kind of contributed to that song.
We're going to bring it out of the vault next week. Is that okay?
I love that. Thank you.
Well, good, and I'm glad to know that there are interesting reviews by LA residents about marathons and races and things like that. They don't remember. My goodness, there's another race, but they've known about them for years. So that's kind of cool. And so what I'd like to do, I mean, Kevin, first of all, what do you have that you would like to share with us about your career as a marathon runner? And just bleed your heart, if you don't mind. I hope you don't mind that phrase, but bleed your heart. Tell us about being a marathon runner, what you love about it, what you hate about it, what you want to do with it.
Well, let me see here. You know, I've had a great couple of good years, you know, between going from cross country to a little taste of the collegiate side of things, and then going out on my own and, you know, fully breaking into the marathon. I've had the opportunity to, you know, travel the world a good bit. I've gotten to run with some legendary folk, for example, Miss Zola Budd from the 1984 Olympics. She ran with me in my first marathon. Yes, sir.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, first 8 miles of my first marathon, we were together. And then she left me. She blew me away.
She is gigantic. Oh, my Lord. That's great. I'm sorry, I'll shut up now.
No, you're fine. You know, and I believe I have a great many more years of competing in me. And but basically my goal essentially is to take I've enjoyed so many years that I want to be able to start giving back a little bit, you know, being a positive impact through my running. And so I've been working for about 3 years now on getting a charity team of sorts going for the Serious Fun Children's Network, which is a series of camps across the globe. That was one of the camps I ran for actually back in Tokyo, was the Solo Puti camp, which is part of the network. And so each marathon, I do my best to have a fundraiser leading up to the marathon in support of a certain camp. So this coming weekend, I'm racing in Atlanta, and I'll be running in support of the Boggy Creek camp down in Florida, about 40 minutes west of Daytona Beach, actually.
The Boggy Creek camp?
That's correct. Boggy Creek.
Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but in Arkansas, Boggy Creek is one of the most famous cryptids and monsters that ever lived. There are four movies about it. Lyle Blackburn has two films. Boggy Creek is the biggest thing in the world, and yet there's another Boggy Creek in Florida. There we go. All of us paranormal people are standing here beating our chests and saying, this is awesome, okay? Well, that's wonderful, and certainly let us know what we can do to help support you for this, because that's great, and congratulations for the work that you do. What else? You got anything else to tell us?
I just enjoy getting out with. I actually train with a team here in Charleston. I didn't do that for a while there. You know, I was working on my own, trying to be my own guy because the collegiate thing didn't work out. But, you know, when you run with more than just yourself, it's such a great experience because you're with people in the same position. You know, like tonight, we were all doing 14 quarter-mile intervals together. We weren't just doing one person doing one run, one doing another. We were all together doing this, so we were all knew what we were going through at that moment. So it's really just – it's good to have people that are working on the same thing as you are, working towards a goal, and then they're there to support you when you have your event.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, I look forward to hearing more from you on this, and we're going to hear more about you as we launch our new podcast, Carolina Racing Legends. You're going to have to talk about some of this stuff on there because you're a racer, aren't you?
I believe so, yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, look,
you are.
That's great. And now I guess I'd like to go around to our three co-hosts, and then I'll finish up with Kevin. Dr. Trey, do you have anything else you'd like to say or add?
No. You know, Kevin, when you're ready to explore putting the marathon, the real marathon, back in marathons, call me up. And
alrighty.
And I'd be happy to come out there. And while you're exercising your running muscles, I could be exercising my jaw on some Greek cuisine. And what I'll do is while you're training, I will do sampling runs at restaurants in Greece. So I will tell you my findings when you finish running for the day, and we'll find a nice place so you can rest up and rejuvenate a little bit. You just let me know when you're ready to start doing that preliminary work.
Right.
I wait until COVID's over. And what we could also do is we could also plan the trip to Greece by way of London. You can get that off of your list, and then all you'd have left is, I guess you still have to do Boston. But,
that's correct.
And you're doing Berlin, so maybe what we should do is do preliminary trips that go through Boston to London to Greece. We don't have to do them all at the same time. That would be about 70, what would that be, 78 miles. It's probably a little bit to ask, a little bit more than you want to do during any one run, but we could do them individually. Let me know when I can help
you.
Well,
I'm definitely interested.
That'll be fun.
Absolutely. I will keep that in mind.
And Kevin, I'll make sure that you can get in touch with Dr. Trey. That'll be great.
Man.
Well,
thank you
kind sir. Thanks, sir. Amazing Velvet. What do you have to say to wrap up here?
Oh, I got something. Breaking news for your new podcast. You ready?
I have stopped. I'm waiting.
Okay. I have a person who is a direct descendant of the famous Fireball Roberts race car driver.
Wow.
His name is Greg Roberts.
Goodness.
He's my best friend. He and I worked together for about 20 years. And he's related to the great Glenn Fireball Roberts. So
okay,
yes.
Well then,
all right,
you're gonna get a call tomorrow, and we're gonna have to
like
discuss
always do.
This if you. Listen, you and Dr. Trey get calls every day because I have to make sure y'all are still alive because you're so important. Scary Cat is all
crap.
I got to say. Yeah, I will. No, that'll be wonderful. And let's see, we've got two co-guests now because when we have if we can get Mr. Long on there, hopefully Dr. Trey will be there with us. And if we get this fella on there, hopefully you'll be on there with us. All right, so that's wonderful, and thank you very much. And we got a lot of great things to do. All of us together are going to be. We're going to be incredible. So first of all, thank you, Dr. Trey. Thank you, Amazing Velvet. And now, our man in Hollywood. In case anyone doesn't know, Graham Greene wrote a book called Iron Man in Havana. It was a bestseller in the 40s. It was a gigantic movie in the 50s. And Devin just reminds me, the way I met Devin, and I want everyone to know this, I used to do a steampunk event, and I just knew that the Addams Family would be a great theme. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, I didn't know anything about how to marry the Addams Family with steampunk. So I got on Facebook, and I started looking for documentaries. And there was a documentary, and there was this fella. It was like from 1991. He looked like he was about, I don't know, 17 or 18. And everybody else looked like they were about 50. And I figured, well, they're probably dead. And his name was Devin Tate. And so I sent him a text. I found him on Facebook. Good Lord. I found him. I sent him a message. And then like 5 minutes later, he said, sure, I'd be glad to talk about steampunk and the Addams Family. And he told me that Uncle Fester was the epitome of steampunk. It was a brilliant observation and statement. And I asked Devin, now Devin, I know you remember this question. I said, hasn't anyone ever asked you to be a co-host of a podcast? You'd be great. And the answer was, not yet. I said, well, they just did. So he's been on here. He's been on here ever since. We really can't do it without him. So Devin, how would you like to close the comments section on marathons, on Kevin, on LA, and on whatever you want to talk about? The floor is yours, sir.
Well, first I'm going to correct you on one thing. The documentary was actually from about 2006, I believe.
Recent. I'm sorry, because whenever I think of that kind of stuff, I think about the time when Soundgarden was around. Okay, sorry, forgive me. Okay.
Yeah, that was just kind of a fluke that I got to be on that Addams Family documentary. That was the connection through my friend Scott Michaels, who has been on our show before. He's the creator of the Dearly Departed tour here in LA and the Find a Death website.
He's great. Oh my God, yeah. He's great. Yeah.
Yeah, so he connected me with the people that were producing that documentary for when they released the Addams Family, I believe it was Volume 2 on DVD. So, yeah, that was how John and I met. Thank goodness all those things happened and fell into place. But as far as marathon and running, I really have a huge amount of respect for people that can do marathons. Maybe someday I'll do one, but for now I'm just going to be happy with the half marathon I did. And also with the three times that I played at the LA Marathon, that was a great experience, because you see these people running by, and, you know, the people in the beginning, the first pack is, you know, the professional runners who are just really great, and they look like they haven't even broken a sweat yet. And then by the time you get about an hour into it, there are some people that do not look like they are going to make it to the finish line. But when you can get them to smile and kind of pump their fist along with the music, and you give them a little inspiration to keep going, it's a really great feeling. And the second two times we played it, we were at, I think, the mile 10 mark. So that's about when people started getting a little bit of fatigue setting in.
Yeah.
They didn't make it quite to that 20-mile, now is the time to race. They made it to the 10-mile, I think it's time to find lunch.
Yeah.
That's funny.
All right. Well, if they want lunch, they need to come to Oliver's in Conway and get the bologna egg and cheese sandwich with mayonnaise and onions. I mean, and that'll solve all of your problems. That's why I'm so happy.
I'll give you heart.
Devin, thank you very much. And Kevin, how would you like to conclude this conversation? I would like to say, first of all, you've been a lot of fun. You've taught us a lot about marathons and what they mean and how hard it is to do. We've touched on a lot of different things because we've got some very talented co-hosts. And so how would you like to conclude this legendary episode of none other than ScaryCast?
Well, thank you again for having me on, and thank you all for your support. You know, I just like to say for those
Absolutely.
Out there, including Devin, you know, they, it's not about as much fun as it is racing. At the end of the day, it's about getting across the finish line. You know, the fact that you take that one step across the starting line to do it, you know, that's what counts. You know.
Exactly.
Awesome.
I agree.
Awesome. Awesome. Yep.
I think the world is about taking that first step across and getting to the finish line. That's what it's about. That's what the world is about. So that is a mm-hmm. philosophically wonderful way to end this incredible episode of ScaryCast. I want to thank our co-hosts.
Yes.
I want to thank, in order of showing up, or yeah, the Amazing Velvet, Dr. Trey Donaway, and oh my goodness, I've lost my mind, Devin Tate. Exactly. Sometimes I lose my mind, and of course, our guest, Kevin Clark. It's been a lot of fun. And Kevin, will you come back later sometime and tell us more about everything after you run your next marathon? Would you come back?
I reckon I will.
Absolutely. Good job.
Well, you better. It'll be a lot of fun. And thank you very much. And I want to remind everybody, you can tune in to ScaryCast, and you can find out when our first Carolina Racing Legends podcast is going to be. It's going to be in 2 weeks. It will be on Podbean, and I think we are going to be moving to Podbean for ScaryCast and everything. So thanks, everyone. I really appreciate it. Personally, I want to thank everyone because you're all my friends, and thank you for being here. Thanks to our guest, Kevin Clark, the marathon runner, and he's also the big racing fan. So we will see you next week, same time, same location. We might even have Rod Serling here. Who knows? We'll have another great guest and our great co-host. Stop laughing at me, Amazing Velvet. Stop laughing at me.
I'm sorry.
And of course, as usual. No, that's all right, of course. You can do anything you want because this is ScaryCast. So I will be calling everyone, calling around the co-hosts and the guests and saying thank you. So we'll see you next week. ScaryCast, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Yay.
Bye.
Good night, BN.
Thank you
Good
for
night.
Joining us, Kevin. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for having
Absolutely.
Me.
Bye.